Welcome to the New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, the New Mind Creator. Today, I'll be interviewing Brandon Wilson. Please make sure to hit the subscribe button so that you'll receive alerts when new episodes are available on Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You know, Brandon, it's interesting how sports could be so related to life itself. You know, being on the golf course, I know you are into golfing, and it's like, it could be like life. We could have a calm fairway in our life, so to speak, but we have to do some things in order to create that if there is chaos. And in leadership, you are, you know, a sought after executive consultant. So you definitely understand how things could be in organizations and individuals could be chaotic at points, but it could be calm if we get the right information and begin implementing things.
Oh, Maurice, you hit it on the head. I mean, there is so much related to golf in our life and in our leadership. And calm is a good word, but more than that, I think it's important that every leader have access to something that I've been referred to, and that is a leadership caddy. So when you're on the golf course, it's good to have a caddy there that will give you instructions or advice about what the distance is to the green, what club to use, whether you need a full swing or a punch shot, you know, what the lie is of the ball relative to where it's laying and how it's laying on the ground. All of those things impact your ability to be successful in that one hole, and you have 17 others to play, and every one of them presents a particular challenge, but there's so many variables that need to be considered when hitting that ball, right? Or before you hit the ball. The lie is what we talked about. Had it rained previous, so it affects the way that the ball responds to the ground. Is the ball wet? Are there leaves or obstacles around it? Look at that big tree over there. If you hit it high enough, it's going to hit the tree. And so there are all of these obstacles in and around that one objective, and that's to get that ball on the green in as few shots as possible. And it's the same in our leadership. I mean, we want to get to accomplishing that objective and that goal in as efficiently as possible. But the one thing that leaders are most ill prepared for are the leaders around them or the people around them who present hazards that make it more difficult for them to efficiently achieve their life and their leadership objectives. And that's why I wrote the book, Sabotage, Leadership That Overcomes Betrayal, Theft, and Deceit.
When you were saying that last part about the obstacles, I was reminded of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He was giving a speech and he told a story about a boy and a girl. They were climbing up on the side of a mountain one day. And he said, the girl said to the boy, she said, I thought there was a smooth path on the side of this mountain, but I don't see anything but rocks and bumps. And the boy said to the girl, it's the bumps in life that help you climb. So there are some obstacles and things in our way, but we have to navigate our way through it, across it, to help us climb.
You do. They're inevitable is what I gather from that, right? Like the message that I received from Dr. King and saying that is that the bumps and the rocks are inevitable.
Yes.
However, the thing that is the most profound to me, Maurice, is that as proficient and as well-learned, as credentialed as leaders are, I am less shocked, but you might be shocked at how ill-prepared those leaders are, and even comfortable they are in talking about or addressing acts of the forces around us that seek to limit our ability to do our leading efficiently. And I want to pause right there and as a sidebar to talk about kind of climbing that mountain. Every leader has a mountain to climb. I mean, there's a reason we wake up every day and set out to do the things that we do. And we all have our own particular reason. You know, if we are not serious, or if we don't become serious as leaders with the same veracity as we do resilience or showing up on time, showing your best self, being prepared for the next challenge, all of these leadership principles that we talk about, being great communicators, if we don't become as serious about protecting our leadership against the forces of sabotage, then we're missing a valuable leadership discipline that some of the wisest and greatest leaders have in their quiver. I mean, it is essential to know how to overcome the voices that says there's no way that you can create a completely electric automobile company, Elon. Because as soon as he stepped out, that's what he heard. When he walked out his door, he was met with those bumps and said, "Nah, you can't do this." Everybody buys Ford. Mm. Everybody buys combustible engines. Everybody drives combustible. You can't do that. And talking about Ford, let's say Henry Ford. You are a madman. There's no way you can make automobiles on a machine in an assembly line. What are you talking about? What is that, Henry? Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. envisioned a world. People, you are crazy. There's no way that black people and white people will play together. Like that speech, that sermon you're giving is just fantasy, Doc. We hear over and over again, but their ability to overcome the acts and the forces around them that seek to limit their ability to achieve their goals was consequential. It was vital to them enduring and ultimately giving us the benefit or the gifts of their leadership journey. And every one of your listeners, they got a gift that the world is waiting to receive. And there are people out there and forces that seek to limit their ability to offer them to us.
Where did your leadership journey begin? When did you realize that you were a leader and that you could communicate effectively to help others?
Man, that is a tough question. And the answer is I don't know, right? And I always tell people, you know, resist the temptation to say that's a good question when really the answer is I don't know. Mm. And I don't know. What I do know, though, is that at a relatively young age, I gained an incredible passion for communication. And it took a hold of me, and it never went away. I knew I wanted to be a communications professional as early as the sixth grade, and I've been very really consistent with that story. It's so people who know me know that I knew I wanted to work in communications in the sixth grade, and I studied it. I studied how to make a message or how to get a point across. To ultimately not just to achieve it being memorable or repeatable, but I started to study how is it that I could use communication to provoke action, and not just any action, but a desired action. And as a football player, I started to see and how communications could literally get a shy kid up to run on a field, to run his body into another person. Think think about that power, right? Like, I mean, just words, and I started to find myself in awe of its power, of its ability. So then I started to study other orators, the great orators of our time and the great speeches of our time. And I focused on writing. I have a journalism degree. Then I focused on other languages. I speak Portuguese. Then I started to focus on poetry. And so I, as a hobby, I write haiku. And so I just, I am a communications nerd, and professionally now, it's all coming together. And so I own a communications agency that specializes in helping executives and large and influential organizations achieve the unfathomable, to do the audacious. And my gift to them is the art of communications.
It's interesting that you said you're a shy kid, and you were involved in football, and ultimately speaking in front of people effectively. Some of the great leaders or great communicators could be considered shy, but that gift somehow, overcoming that, is a great gift that they have. Abraham Lincoln is someone who comes to mind right now as we speak.
Yeah, there's a spectrum of introversion and extroversion, or those personality personas. And for me personally, I am an introverted extrovert. And so I need alone time in order to continue to be extroverted. And it's wherever I am on that spectrum, when you plot it along, it's a pretty interesting spot for me, because I really enjoy quiet, and that allows me to hear other people and to hear other leaders and to hear their challenges and to speak to their needs once it's processed. And so I think introversion is an incredible power that if you do have it as a leader, and if one of your listeners are introverted, hear it from me first. If you don't already believe it, it is indeed a superpower. It allows you to be comfortable in a place of quiet and self, and thus give the ability for you to have heightened awareness with your ears and with your mind as it concerns helping other people. And so I'm glad you say that, because there, no matter where you are, whether you're introverted, extroverted, somewhere in between, you have an incredible gift to offer. There are two examples that I want to talk about in terms of leadership that are highlighted in the book. And one is, you've heard me talk about it with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., that he had a great gift to give us, and that he ultimately gave us. And that is the belief, but also the action of congressional change and the changing of laws that changed our relationship with society, with other people, and with race relations. And we still continue to be challenged with that today. But in order to get to that place, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had to endure all manner of sabotage. And one of them was lying. There were reputation assassination. There were defections within his own circle, power circle, of people trying to get money and assets for themselves, to enrich themselves, because they had access to his growing influence. And he had to overcome that. Another leader that I like to talk about is Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs was on a mission to not create the iPhone, more so than it is, he was on a mission to change the way that we engage with the world and how the world engages with us. And along his journey in creating the iMac, there was a, or introducing the iMac, he hired a CEO so that he could focus on scale. John Sculley of PepsiCo came and became the CEO of Apple for a stint. And John Sculley, for whatever reason, or for whatever selfish gain, saw fit to sabotage Steve Jobs, effectively doing it effectively and getting him ultimately fired from the company that he founded. It was what happened in Steve Jobs' second chapter, in his second wave of his leadership, that he started to get serious about protecting his gifts and his leadership journey from sabotage. And it is perhaps the most undocumented and untalked about superpower that he had. And his ability to see who was for him, who supported him, but most importantly, who didn't support him within his environment, was perhaps the most essential tool necessary that led him to completing gifting each of us with a tool, with a computer that can be held in the palm of our hands. And I want you to think about like how magnificent that is. And for every Steve Jobs and for every Martin Luther King, I dare say to you, Maurice, there are probably 200 others. And those are the two shapers who survived sabotage. And there are 400 others or 398 others who didn't. So imagine what the world would look like if we had more Edisons, if we had more Jobs, if we had more Kings and their gifts. And so sabotage is a really critical problem that leaders don't focus enough on until it meets them at the front door of their office as they enter to do their work.
It's not talked about as much as how to be a good leader. Sabotage is rarely talked about, you know, in the way that being a good leader and the leadership styles and all this stuff, but it's very important to the process, it sounds like.
It is. No, it's essential to the process. And for those who have mentors or have coaches, or if you're looking for a coach and or, you know, or looking for a leadership caddy or an advisor to help you get through the forces in your life that seek to stop you, I mean, just visit brandonwilson.co. You can sign up time on my schedule. And I provide you free of charge, not any charge at all, just completely free. I will give you my time and hear you out and listen to some of the challenges that or barriers that you're facing and help you start to develop a plan of action to actually get you on the green, what we talked about earlier, to get you to your most critical objective. You know, there is a saying that before you write a book, you must first become it. And I am, you know, for nearly 20 years, I've been helping leaders reach that next level in their productivity. I've been helping executives succeed early in new positions after they get promoted by tapping into the power of relationship and collective impact. I've helped major corporations do world-changing activities, from working with Yale University to get after global health disparities, and working closely with Apple to build a college campus that will provide innovation and transformative learning for historically Black colleges and universities. But nothing has taught me or prepared me more as a leader than being a victim of leadership sabotage. And I dare say a survivor. My saboteur was a bully. I mean, there are all manner of different types of saboteurs, but mine was a bully. And I was drawn to an opportunity to buy another company. I met with the CEO, and long story short, I still believe to this day that he was never really interested in selling me his company, more so than he was interested in utilizing my talents under the disguise of due diligence. And our uneven relationship I was encouraged to take some poor business advice. And we set up a third entity prematurely. And I guess advice of my legal counsel, I started putting assets and money into this third entity for an asset sale. So that will be the entity that I will ultimately buy. And I will put money into it while I was doing due diligence, which is foolish in retrospect. But sometimes we find ourselves in these uneven relationships and we can get sort of blinded by the glitz at the end of the tunnel. And about a year and a half into due diligence, I got a call from my attorney. He calls me over to his office and he said, "Brandon, I just did a check to see if that third entity existed, and it doesn't. And I have one question for you. Where is your money going?" And I looked at my attorney. I said, "I don't know." And nearly $700,000 later, I survived that act of sabotage. But let me share with you really quickly what it posed a risk to. The reason I wanted to acquire other companies and grow my own company wasn't for money's sake, because there are certain levels of leaders. Some leaders want to grow or accomplish what they're seeking because they understand the risk of failure and the consequences it can have on the world around them. And the reason I wanted this to be successful was because it would allow me to provide opportunities for my wife. It would allow me to have a kid. We planned on having a little a baby. I had to put that on hold. It risked the prospect of us moving to a better home and having a better life and allowing me to do other things that will unlock other levels of leadership, would ultimately have impact on the world. And we drew up separation papers. We sent it over to the saboteur, and almost in a mafia style meeting, I remember sitting across the desk from him in his office. And this is what he said to me. He said, "Brandon, I know you got my money and you're saying you're not going to give me any more of your money. And that's okay." He said, "But if you choose not to give me any more of your money, what I'm going to do is kill your wife." Mm-hmm. Think about that. "I'm going to kill your wife." And then he looks up in the sky, kind of points into the sky, like an aha moment, like, "Yeah. And I'll tell you how I'm going to do it," is what he said. And he said, "I'm going to call these well-connected statesmen. I'm going to call my buddies at the police department, and I'm going to get some trumped up charges against you. And I'm going to get you arrested. That's what I'm going to do. And I know it's not going to be true charges. And I know you're going to have to hire lawyers, going to spend a whole lot of money. And you may even get locked up, be able to bail yourself out because you have my money. But I'm not interested in any of that. What I'm interested in is the mugshot. And I'm going to use the mugshot to do two things. One, to embarrass your wife and letting her know that everybody, all her friends know that she's married to a crook. And the second thing I'm going to do is I'm going to use that mugshot to blackball you from doing any business so I can rob your household of the income needed to live. That's what I'm going to do." And sit back and think about that for a moment. And so having survived that manner or that level of sabotage, what it prompted me to do after I survived it, I was sitting with a good friend of mine. He said, "What are you going to do with this incredible journey that you've been on? My employees stayed with me. My clients stayed with me. My company stayed intact. My wife still married to me. We now have that baby. We now live in that neighborhood. So we survived it. We overcame." He said, "What are you going to do with this?" I said, "Well, I'm going to study sabotage and I'm going to go and talk to other leaders." And to my surprise, one in every three leaders I talked to had their own story of sabotage on their way to where they were when I met them. And it was incredible. I said, "Man, this thing is everywhere. Why is it that nobody's talking about it?" So I asked the question, and the answers I received were amazing. Almost to a person, each of them looked at me and said, Brandon, I was embarrassed that I, as an influential, powerful leader, found myself in such a situation. And it is that embarrassment that stops us from helping other people by giving them the benefits of our own stories. And when we fail to prepare other leaders to overcome sabotage, we give advantage to the saboteurs, because every time they meet an opportunity to steal or betray or to stymie progress, they're meeting a victim who is more than likely ill-prepared to overcome their attacks. And so, Maurice, there are four things that I want to equip your listeners with to prepare them along their leadership journey with the lenses for seeing leadership sabotage before it strikes. In my book, I call these the four horsemen of sabotage. The first is jealousy. Jealousy is hatred disguised as anything but. If you see jealousy around your network, or is in your life, or you yourself are jealous, then you are vulnerable to the forces that propel the activity that's powered by that jealous horseman. And in my book, it details specificity the types of activity that leadership sabotage shows itself when it's fueled by jealousy. And more than that, gives you the equipment to know how to address it and to avoid it in the future. The other horseman is arrogance. And arrogance shows itself as an inability to be coached. This force, or people who are overtaken by this force, see their... see constructive criticism as personal affronts. They also lack self-awareness. And the combination of the two makes that person, or that four people who are overtaken by that force, incapable of being sensitive to the impact that their actions have on others. They completely lack self-awareness, but also situational awareness. And so they become bulls in China shops. And if that force is around you, then there's another horseman that may be encroaching or approaching close to your life. The third are liars. And they don't need a lot of introduction. We know what lying is. But what is important to know that there are levels to lying. The first is lying to distract people from themselves. Look over there so I can continue to do what I need to do over here. If you're a manager of a large department, what it may show is an employee who literally wants their supervisor to be focused on other things so that they can be perpetually consumed with what they're comfortable with without taking any more responsibility or participating in any way to the progression of that department that you're leading. And there's another level of lying where people literally lie to harm others. It's not a distraction, but it's to get people out of the way. Much in my story, where the liar wanted to use lying as a force to get me thrown into jail so I can get out of his way. And then the last is seduction. The last horseman is seduction. And seducers relish in getting us to join them along their journey to do adventurous, sometimes unethical things along their journey. And the carrot that they typically dangle is that if you join me, and I get this promotion, or we win, or it works, you're going to come along with me and continue to enjoy in the spoils of our victory. And it's never about the ends. It's all about the means for the seducers. They relish in getting you to say yes to compromising who you are, compromising your values, to join them in whatever it is that they seek to achieve. And so when you see those four horsemen in and around your life, know that there are variables that are getting really close to your life and leadership that will seek to use all manner of tactics to limit or to stop you from achieving the ultimate goal of your leadership journey.
And you call them the four horsemen to sabotage leadership?
The four horsemen of sabotage.
Four horsemen of sabotage. Now, why didn't you act out when this man said what he said to you? He is going to lie on you. He's already taken your money. What prevented you from reacting impulsively and going to war with him, or just cower and just let him do what he wanted to do?
It's great, great question. Again, and I do have the answer for this. In my book, and in our lives, we sometimes face bullies. And bullying is an act of persistence. So often we think that doing nothing is, or avoiding bullies is the way to go. If our CEOs are bullies, we want to avoid that person. If our managers are bullies, we want to, if our spouses are bullies, or, you know, whatever, right? Our friends are bullies, we want to avoid that person. And that is the absolute wrong way to address bullies. You have to hit them back. And that's precisely what I did. And, you know, I was sitting in the office, 7 o'clock at night. I was working late that day. I get a call, and it's a detective who calls me and wants to meet with me. And I knew that he had made good on whatever his game plan is. And so for anybody out there dealing with a bully in particular, when bullies tell you what they're going to do to you, believe them. And he laid out the literal game plan, and he did A, and then he did B, then he did C, then he did, like, it worked exactly as he said he would do it. So if you're confronted with a bully, believe what they say they're going to do. I was fortunate enough to be in a position to punch back, and I had attorneys who punched back. And they did an incredible job. And I also had the wherewithal to set up an infrastructure around me to stymie his attacks. And my book outlines a lot of things that you can do as well to protect yourself from bullies, if indeed your saboteur is a bully. And so I absolutely punched back. And I think it was my ability to fight back is what ultimately led to my survival.
That is a tremendous story. I mean, it's definitely, I see why you wrote the book.
But let me be clear, Maurice. The book was inspired by my story, but I was compelled to write it because of the other stories in the book. And the book lays out several stories of chief executives and executives who face all manner of sabotage. And some of them survived it. Some of them had the instincts to, and others didn't. And it documents the impact of their ability to have that leadership discipline. And let me say this last thing, which is really important, that even after you read the book and you apply all of the tools to ward off sabotage professionally and even personally, because there's a such thing as self-sabotage, I am not fooled into thinking that you're going to win every battle. And so there's a chapter in the book dedicated specifically to disappointment. How do we deal with disappointment? And it's important that we understand the power of disappointment as a limiting force, because that disappointment is what leads other leaders to not share their battles with sabotage with those they mentor, or with those they lead, or with those they influence. And if we can overcome disappointment, then we provide ourselves with an opportunity to make every adventure, every encounter with sabotage, an opportunity to become a more effective and a sharper leader, and also increase our influence by sharing those stories and those lessons learned with generations of leaders who are behind us.
How did you avoid becoming bitter after this sabotage attempt?
You know, I hate to use sports analogy so much, but we started this way. But what I will say is that winning cures a lot of stuff. You know, there's power in winning. And like I said, my wife stayed by my side. And so let me back up. As I was going through it, and I hope you, any listeners who are dealing with betrayal, theft, or deceit in their lives, one of the things that I have made a habit of is viewing really challenging situations as adventures, not as obstacles. And so I was very public and verbose. I didn't go into hiding when these salacious charges were out at me, against me. I wore my best suits every day. I wanted people to see me. This is important. See me. Hey, you know, Brandon's a cook. You know, they got those charges on him. Brandon, see me. Mm. I want you to see me. That's a victory. Think about it. That is an act of defiance. That is a revolutionary act when you're faced with sabotage. It's just to be seen. Saboteurs want you to go away. They want you to hide. Be seen. Oh, Maurice, I was sharp, brother. And so I would be seen. The other thing is, whenever anybody asked me about it and said, how are you dealing with this? I always told them, man, this is a great leadership adventure. I'm having a great time because I'm learning some new things. Whenever you're losing or there's failing in front of you, but you're learning, it's not a loss. No matter what the outcome was, I learned so much about business acquisition and about business acumen during this entire process that I gained so much in value that it could be seen as an adventure by me. And then the third thing is all of the things that I value, the integrity of my business, my family unit, became stronger as a result of it. And so I focused on that and not the acts of sabotage. I hired lawyers to do that. And that's one of the pieces of advice in the book as well, is to make sure that you utilize your network and not take on more than you need to. But listen, I have learned that in those times of adventures is when powerful things are about to happen in your life. You know, growing up, I was homeless twice. I remember when I got accepted into college, I was sitting on the bed of a truck stop motel because my family, we didn't have a house to live in. And I'm being accepted to the only university I ever applied to. And mind you, I applied to that university on a bet. The teacher bet me $20 that I would not apply. And I needed the money. Think about that. And I'm homeless, and I received this other chance. When I received my first job as a higher education consultant, I was working as a carpet cleaning salesperson in a call center. And I got the phone call on a phone that was weeks away from being deactivated because I didn't have enough money to pay for the bill. And so whenever those challenges came close to my life, I had tricked myself, or I had been made to believe that incredible gains were right on the other side of that challenge. And I think it is a combination of winning and a combination of living a life that proved to me that adversity was just on the other side of prosperity that allowed me to endure and to continue to endure well after.
So your self-talk is important. The way you viewed things.
That's right.
People view things in a negative light, but you chose on purpose to view it as a potential positive.
Absolutely.
And yes, that's phenomenal, Brandon. That's absolutely phenomenal.
Well, thank you.
What are some of your social media again?
Well, you can follow me on Instagram. Every day I give pro leadership tips on Instagram. You can follow me on Instagram at brandonwilson.co, brandonwilson.co. And to gain invaluable leadership tools and tips. I am Brandon Wilson on LinkedIn. And every week I offer, or every day, I offer leadership haiku on LinkedIn, just inspirational nuggets in three lines to help you unlock the potential to become a better leader. But if you want to connect with me, you could just go to the website, brandonwilson.co. On that website, you can reserve time on my calendar. You can also purchase my newest leadership book called Sabotage: Leadership That Overcomes Betrayal, Theft, and Deceit. And that is brandonwilson.co, brandonwilson.co.
What's your one to grow on? What valuable piece of information would you like to leave our audience with?
Well, thank you for that question and for the opportunity. It is doing business at the speed of relationship. That is the most powerful and most important advice that I can leave your listeners with. We are often tricked into thinking that the pace of business is the pace of transaction, that we need it now. We got to go now. But just as in golf, you got to slow down, think about what it is that you are out to achieve, what hazards are around you, and then look for those relationships, not vendors, not partners, but look for people who you can build a relationship with, who can help you fulfill those objectives. And then start slowly building relationships with them. And my book outlines how to identify those service providers to us who possess a servant's heart. Those folks who possess a servant's heart will run businesses and provide us with services that are unflinching, unyielding, and uncompromising. You can count on them. And so by doing business with those value principles in place, which you can gain in the book, will allow you to stop being imprisoned by vendors or imprisoned by people who just have ambition, and start working with people who truly wants to use their gifts to sow into our mission and our objectives as leaders. So do business at the speed of relationship.
Thank you for listening to The New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, The New Mind Creator. This podcast has been sponsored by Abundant Sports and True Serum. Head over to www.mauriceflournoy.com to receive more motivation and insight to help create your new mind.